I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. This show is where we host thoughtful conversations about the issues shaping our communities, our economy, and our future. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about our state and economy. Visit lockedin.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. Today's conversation is a little different because I'm a Republican and I've spent a lot of time publicly challenging my own party, not because I've changed sides, but because I believe principles matter more than politics. And right now we're living in a moment where too many conversations are driven by loyalty to party instead of loyalty to truth, discipline, and results. So when a Democrat steps into a deeply red district and says, I can represent you, that deserves more than a headline. It deserves a real conversation, not soft questions, not political theater, but a real challenge. Can you earn the vote of people who don't already agree with you? High Point Mayor Cyril Jefferson is here to answer that. Mayor, thank you for locking in, man. How are you today?
I'm good, Algernon. Appreciate you having me on.
As always, man, and I should say to my audience, welcome back. You've actually done the show before, so this isn't your first rodeo, and we had a chance to host you for a conversation when you had first got elected to mayor of High Point, and now you're seeking a higher office. So I guess let's start there. You're running as a Democrat in a deeply red district. Why do you believe you can win in the 6th district?
Algernon, I appreciate you having me on, and I'm glad this is our second time back. Shout out to all the folks out there listening, and I'm really looking forward to today's conversation. With regards to the race, why I chose to run for U.S. Congress, very simple, Algernon. Current Representative Addison McDowell, when he first got the Trump endorsement roughly 2.5 years ago or so, someone set up a lunch meeting between he and I. We met for lunch to chat, and the very first thing out of his mouth, Algernon, was, Mayor, I want to do this meeting with you because when I go to Washington, I intend to be your partner. I'm going to partner with folks regardless of their political party, because ultimately government should actually work. And in order for it to work, we have to find those common ways for it to work, supporting our local economy, safer cities, so on and so forth. And he said, I want to tell you, even though I got the Trump endorsement, I don't want you to think that I'm one of those MAGA loyalists. Those were his words, not mine. And I said, wow, that's an interesting way to start the conversation. I said, well, I'm grateful that that's your position. Let's find a way to work together. And imagine my surprise then, Algernon, when we get into it. And within the first 90 days of him being in office, we see tariffs that end up having harmful impacts on the High Point furniture market. We see more than $40 million taken from this district for projects that were supporting housing and infrastructure, transportation, education, workforce development. And not only that, but the very first bill that he even sponsors coming out of the House is to rename Dulles Airport after Donald J. Trump. And, you know, you reach out to him about it, and his response was sort of this template boilerplate response, just simply, hey, the president won with the mandate. We're supporting his agenda. And after getting that response a few times, Algernon, it became pretty clear we weren't going to get that partner in Washington that that he sort of purported to offer when we first met. It became clear to me that we needed someone who could represent and not just be loyal to one person, but someone who would think about the country, the country's interests, loyal to the Constitution, think about this region. The 6th district is ripe with all types of potential, great history and legacy, and we just want to build on that. And I want to make sure that this region does have that partner and does have that representative in the 6th district.
You know, you talk about the 6th district, and I'm very familiar with the 6th district. A friend of mine and former Congressman Mark Walker once represented that district before the lines were redrawn, and Kathy Manning then took the district. Then the lines were redrawn again to make it a deeply red district. And that's how our current Congressman, Representative McDowell, was able to win. There are a lot of MAGA loyalists that are part of the 6th district that might hear this conversation, and they may be wondering, why should they consider you? Why should they cross the party lines to put a Democrat in the in that district?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple ways to answer that, Algernon. If a person tells me that they're a conservative, they believe in limited government, fiscal responsibility, being tough on crime, right? Supporting small businesses. I would tell you hands down that this current administration has not been any of that. Mm. That my legacy as a mayor of High Point has been all of that and then some. But if you say, Algernon, to me, how do you come and try to persuade MAGA loyalists? Well, that may be a little different because I think what we're seeing, and trust me, I don't mean to be offensive, but there is an element in our country of folks who say, well, ideologies and, you know, government effectiveness, that's not the true North Star. The true North Star is what did Donald Trump say we should do? And we'll do that. And if you say to me, can we convince MAGA loyalists? I'm not going to stand here or sit here and tell you that we can convince MAGA loyalists. Some MAGA loyalists will simply say, if you don't support Donald Trump, I just can't get with you. So even though there are people who voted for no more wars, when Trump starts the war, they say, well, listen, Trump's got a reason. Even though they say, we don't like to be taxed, what Trump gives you a tax via tariff, and they say, well, we trust Donald Trump. They say that, you know, we support local economy, but when our economy's taking kind of hit that it has, you go to them and they just say, look, we support Donald Trump. Those folks, I don't know what to tell them. Because for me, I don't take an oath to a person. I take an oath to the Constitution and to serving the best interests of a constituency. So I can't promise that a MAGA loyalist would hear this and be convinced.
You know, I like that response because my audience and anyone who has followed me since this current administration has arrived at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue know that I do not believe fundamentally nor firmly do I believe that MAGA is conservatism. I do not believe that is traditional conservatism. I think the Republican Party is under hostage, under siege from populists. And I think when you look at this MAGA movement or this following, it's masked as populism and it's done to the extreme right. Now, don't get me wrong. I've seen the same happen within the Democratic Party before, where there's this populist type movement that hits the extreme left. And I think when you look at our country, people are not looking for the extreme right, nor are they looking for the extreme left. I think they're looking for something in the middle. They're just looking for some common sense solutions to problems that they're facing or their families are facing every single day. That's really, at the end of the day, that's all people want. And some of this extremism gets brought into it that plays to people's emotions. And I think to some degree, they are trying or they're making an attempt to redefine the word conservatism. And as long as myself and others are alive, I just won't stand for it. I've dedicated a considerable amount of my career to being a true conservative and not a populist. And when I look at the Republican Party right now, I see more populism than anything. But here's my question, because you talked a little bit about your record as mayor of High Point and how you've actually championed what you would describe as conservative policies. Are we entering an era where Democrats have just a legitimate opportunity right now to talk to traditional conservatives? And if that's the case, if you believe that we're entering that era, how do you start having that conversation with traditional or ordinary conservatives?
Yeah, Algernon, I think one, I'd say to answer your question, Democrats themselves are just not monoliths, the same way Republicans are not monoliths, right? You've got a wide spectrum in terms of where people fall on things. So all I can do is be very true, very authentic, very honest. I cut to the core in terms of what my fundamental beliefs are and the things that I've worked towards, the things that I believe will make this country stronger. So I want to be clear. I can talk about positions I think a party could take, but I'm just clear that there are some people in the party who are going to be not at the same part of the political spectrum as I am. Right. I'm what some people may call a moderate. Moderate is interesting. Other words for it, blue dog Democrat, whatever. I think a really easy way to sort of say is that I do my best to be as pragmatic as I can. I think there are people who want government to be effective. And for me, I don't always want to wax poetic. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe in inspiring people. I believe in having vision and believing in us reaching the very best days yet ahead. But I also like to be wax prosaic. I mean, let me say it that way in terms of how we govern. You probably heard it said that you campaign in poetry, but govern in prose. That there are times when you think about, hey, some people claim Democrats are soft on crime. I can't speak for every Democrat. Let me speak for this Democrat, though, right?
That's what I like to hear, yeah.
And that in High Point, we've seen 67% drop in violent crime and in homicides in High Point since I've been mayor. To be clear, you say, well, what goes for that? We've got incredible law enforcement. But I'm also someone who's going to just note that culture is incredibly important in any organization. It's important at High Point City Hall. This is a city council that partners with our law enforcement to give them the resources and tools that they need. And every so often, it's put to the test to see how pragmatic we'll be. Sometimes you'll get some things that flare up in community and people will say, oh, you need to take a strong stance and condemn this police department. And I'll go meet with chief, right? Speak with the city manager, speak with our attorney, get an understanding. Hey, how we do? Anything illegal done? Unethical? Immoral? Right? Any of that? Okay. Were we within policy everywhere on this? Okay. So we were within our grounds to do what we did and people got an emotional response. I get it. Emotional responses. I can't tell someone how to feel. Like, you feel what you feel, but I can't let someone's emotional response stop us from governing effectively. So what we're going to do here is to keep trust established between city council and law enforcement, is that when they're not outside the bounds, we're not going to come down on them just because it's politically expedient. But we will expect that when someone is outside the bounds, that chief, you handle it. And our chief, and not just this chief, chiefs before have handled it very well in terms of making sure folks are not outside the bounds. And that's trust. Is that always politically expedient? Is that the most popular thing on social media? No. But it is effective governance, and it's what has allowed our law enforcement to be effective. I could say the same thing about economic development, right? I could go on and on about a number of ways that we approach doing business, and it has everything to do with, we know that people in High Point want to live in a city that feels safe. It doesn't matter if they're Democrat, Republican, old, young, black, white, rich, poor. It doesn't matter who they are. They want to feel safe. They want to know that when they call 911, law enforcement is going to show up. They want to know that that law enforcement can stop crime when crime is happening. They also want to know that that law enforcement isn't being racist or isn't being, you know, biased in a way that's making it harmful for communities. So we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can have a law enforcement that stops crime and a law enforcement that is incredibly responsible to its community. And it has been that. And the record shows it. So I when you say, how might Democrats in this time speak to conservatives and champion some of those things? It's funny because I don't want to put safe communities in anyone's bucket. I think safe communities are just what any human wants to be in. And you can call me red, blue. It doesn't really matter what you call me. As long as I lead a city that's doing its best to ensure that every resident can feel safe, can thrive, can have a working income, can have opportunities, right? That's what matters.
Well, it sounds to me you're not on board with the message of defund the police,
not
which
was championed
by the Democratic Party so many years ago. And I know you personally, and I know you're not. I know your heart as well. You mentioned a moment ago about Representative McDowell being very loyal to the Trump administration, or maybe even to Donald Trump himself. You know, to some degree, you know, the RNC has been totally remade in Trump's image. They've gotten rid of anybody that would have been there pre-Trump, and they basically installed party loyalists all the way through the party. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, I can understand why Representative McDowell may feel like he has to kowtow to what's going on, because if he wants to keep his seat and he doesn't want to be primary, he has to basically go along and to get along with whatever Republican leadership says. I think also right now, when you look at a Senator Tillis, who's been very outspoken the last few months, I think the reason he's so outspoken is because he's not, you know, connected at the hip with the party any longer. And he doesn't have to worry about raising money. And so he can now, you know, use his voice, and the chains have sort of come off to some degree. you know, if you're successful with this, if you make it to Washington, if you win in the general election, you're going to be also beholden and attached to the DNC and to your party. There will become a time where you have to run for re-election. There will become a time where you have to worry about a primary challenge. There will become times where you also have to raise lots of money to be able to keep your position. Are you willing, if you win the 6th congressional district, are you prepared to go against the leadership within your own party?
I'm prepared to do what's right for the constituents of this district. So that means that if there's a position that Democratic leadership takes that I don't think is in the best interest of our district, that flies in the face of American values, then yes, I can dissent. That's what American democracy is about, that we're not loyal to people. We're loyal to values. We're loyal to this Constitution because we believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all people. I think I'd be remiss here, Algernon, if I didn't just say this, that there are real reforms that we need in government, real reforms that I've been pushing for. Some of them you may have seen me talk about quite a bit. And one of those reforms has everything to do with term limits for those in Congress. And I get the side of it where people say, don't you want to have experienced folks with expertise in Congress who know the ropes and can do this and that? And yes, I can point to very good cases of people who served in Congress for a while. And I thought they were very effective even into later years being in Congress. But for every person I can find who's a great example, I can also find examples of folks who compromise their values, compromise what they believe to be true simply because they want to get reelected. And you brought up Senator Tom Tillis, and I'm glad you did, because he right now, in my mind, is the poster child for why we absolutely need term limits, because a person finds moral clarity and courage when they're not focused on being reelected. When you say, hey, I'm just going to speak with conviction based on what I think is right. I'm not focused on being reelected. I just want to do what's right by the people. And the truth is, that position is a position that everyone wants you to take. Now, Algernon, I'm no fool. There are people who say to me, Cyril, that sounds really awesome and idealistic. It just doesn't sound like something that can actually happen in our country. If you tell me that can't happen in our country and I'm just supposed to sit here and believe it can't happen, are you telling me I'm just supposed to give up on America? Am I just supposed to give up on good governance? Am I just supposed to give up on the chance of real integrity in government? Because if you tell me that, if you want to tell 340 million Americans give up on integrity in government, then say that. But if you're not going to say that, then we got to give it a chance, which is why me and 100 plus other candidates around the country who are running for Congress this year, most of us new, are saying that when we get in, we don't care who it hurts and who it opposes. We are putting term limits in place. Now, we can negotiate what those term limits look like. Maybe it's 18 years, maybe it's 12 years, whatever it may be. There will be term limits in place to make sure that you don't have forever politicians. Your job as a representative is not to get reelected. Your job as a representative is to serve the people, simple and plain.
No more forever wars and no more forever politicians. That's a big campaign slogan in itself right now. I know it's so difficult to get the initiative around term limits through Congress. And then it's also difficult to get a president to sign off on it. But I tell you, it at the very basic level, if we could just get some of the money out of politics, that would change a lot of things. I think what you're seeing with Senator Tillis right now, it's not just the politics aspect of it. It's the amount of money that you've got to raise. When you're talking about having to raise, you know, when you're talking about a Senate race, a United States Senate race in North Carolina, of all places, is going to cost $1 billion on both sides. When you've got families within North Carolina that don't know where they're going to eat or where they're going to lay their head tonight. But what we're spending $1 billion to elect the next U.S. senator, that is a clear signal to every voter and any person with common sense all around the country. We are spending way too much money in politics. When you're spending billions and billions of dollars to get a job that pays $400,000 a year, that should tell people a lot. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm in term limits. I'm on board with that. But I think immediately we have to figure out a way to get money in politics.
Yeah. So Algernon, you and I are doing a great conversation right now. And I pray to God that this gets to as many people as possible, because I mentioned the reform about term limits. But let's just be clear. If you go and look on my page, go look on my website, go look anywhere and you hear me talk about government reforms, term limits is one pillar of that. There's four other pillars. So I'm going to name these four pillars just real quick. And then I want to talk about the specific pillar that gets to what you're talking about. So in addition to term limits, I think you got to ban stock trading for folks who are in Congress, and not just Congress. I also think the executive branch has to get in there, too. think you got to have a moratorium on lobbying, which means that when I leave Congress, I can't go into some cushy lobbying job. Right now, that moratorium's a year. It needs to be 5 years. And if you say to me, well, you know, that kind of conflicts or flies in the face of, you know, maybe some relationships that I'm trying to leverage, you should not be in Congress trying to leverage relationships for your next job. Mm-hmm. You should be in Congress representing the people. So we need a 5-year moratorium before you go lobby. There's plenty of lobbyists who have never served in Congress. You could do the same thing, right? Like you're not out here to be in Congress for your next job, period. So we got term limits. We got banning stock trading. We got moratorium on Congress. I mean, on lobbying, a real enforceable code of ethics for the Supreme Court. I think you kind of get that and where that falls and people and what they've been doing that has just been corrupt. But the fifth pillar that I want to talk about to your question is about Citizens United. It's what Congress can do to effectuate a law that mitigates the harmful effects of a Citizens United, right? The Supreme Court decided that, hey, it's okay for dark money to be in politics, and I'm not okay with that. Citizens United effectively made it where folks can give endless amounts of money. And I think that there's got to be some level of accountability there. We're at a point where right now people feel like money makes the decisions for who should be in office instead of the people. And I think the other point I want to raise is this, Algernon. There are cases where money doesn't actually win the election for you. We just saw it with Phil Berger and Sam Page. Phil Berger had millions of dollars. And Sam Page, I think he had a 5-figure total fundraise, right? That's right. Compared to 7 figures for Berger. And Berger was in the mid 7 figures. He outraised them considerably. And yet Sam Page won because people were fed up with what they thought was just corrupt practices and a representative who was out of touch. I think what we're seeing is folks waking up and saying, hold on, we want government who works well. We want government that's willing to negotiate across the aisle to get things done. We want government that's not going to be extreme on each side. We want government that's not out here cutting these shady deals. Which is why I firmly believe that the reforms I brought up to you, I'm preaching them and shouting them from every mountaintop. I've said this out and put me on the record and I'm fine with it. If you were to say to me today, proposition to me that, Cyril, you're going to get into office come November, or you're going to win the election come November 2026, and you're going to get sworn in come January 2027. And in exchange for that, over those 2 years, you will get to pass those 5 reforms that you said. But after that, you can never be in Congress again. Algernon, I take that deal in a heartbeat. I take it without even talking about it. I have no issues telling you right here today that I'm not running to be in Congress because I have some propped up idea of romanticizing what it's like to serve in Congress. Like, I've been in public office now. This is my 7th year. It is a sacrifice. I spend time away from my family all the time. I deal with criticism, whether it's earned or unearned. And sometimes I just get like literally no recognition for things that you do well. And that's okay. You know, it's a sacrifice being in public office. I am perfectly fine getting into Congress, effectuating these reforms that we talked about, putting them in place so that way we have a better Congress going forward, and then riding off into the sunset. I don't need to stay elected forever, Algernon. And I think the truth is, if you have more people with that on their mind, we would change America very quickly.
Well, honestly, Mayor, I think some people go to Washington with that on their mind. I'm going to just say it publicly because I've written an article about this for the Carolina Journal a couple of years ago. My good friend Mark Walker. I mean, I remember when he first went to Congress. I remember when he won the big runoff race in that district. And when I say this man was pure of heart and went to Congress and went to Washington with the best intentions, but when he got there, something happened. I don't know if they're putting something in the food, Mayor. I don't know if it's in the water. I'm not sure what's going on. But it's almost like when you get there, you forget everything that you promised. You forget all the reasons that you went there. Then all of a sudden, you're cutting all these deals to try to hold on to power and influence and your title and your seat when it's not even your seat. I'm so grateful that Senator Berger learned whose seat that really is, that it's not his seat. It's the people of Rockingham County, and they can call you home whenever they're absolutely ready. And then I've seen my good friend Walker come back to North Carolina and play these political games and run for this race and run for that race and do these kind of things. My point is this, is something about once you get elected to an office of that stature or that level, there's something that just seems to go wrong with people. And the longer they stay up there, the longer they stay away from home, they seem to just forget where they come from. They seem to forget why they were actually put there. So here's one of my questions for you. You've been out in the district. You've been campaigning. I've been watching you. I know you're working hard. I know you've been working hard for the citizens of High Point for 7 years. When you're out in the district, why are people telling you that they want you to go to Congress? What is it that they really want? I understand your five pillars, but what is the voters really want you to get done when you get there?
I mean, they want government that works, man. They want government that doesn't get caught up in these shutdowns over these positions that just make no sense. Like, they want government to work. Now, again, extremism on either side, I just think has been harmful. I think we saw some of that extremism in Minnesota this past January, where we saw two like U.S. citizens literally just gunned down, killed. Right. And as far as I know, I don't see any reasonable person anymore trying to justify their murder. No one reasonable. Right. You can justify use of force and all types of things when it feels like someone's out of place. But just pulling out guns and just shooting folks. I don't see anyone reasonable trying to justify that anymore. People want to see government work. And they believe that they've seen here at High Point a form of government that has been incredibly pragmatic, that's been solutions oriented, that has been innovative, that's been true, that the promises that were made were also promises kept. And look, the things I talk about, you could cut me open and you find that those are just things true to my core. And I don't know what's in the food, Algernon, in D.C., to your point in the last question. Maybe I pack lunches all the time or something. I don't know. I am perfectly fine. It can't be the money, because you get up in Congress. I'm not saying that. Look, the salary, I think, is roughly $200,000, somewhere in that range. And so I think maybe for some folks, they feel like that's a dream come true. I think $200,000 is a good amount of money to make. But to sell your soul for $200,000 a year is just not worth it. There are plenty of ways that you can keep your integrity and make $200,000 a year. If you work hard enough. I do believe in that. I'm one of those people who believes that if you work hard, you grind, you have the grit, you make sacrifices, right? You outcompete the next person, then you can make yourself up to a point where you're making that kind of money and you don't have to worry about selling your soul. I am very true to what I say. And most people from this community, I mean, they've seen me grow up. They've seen me be that educator who worked in communities and thought about how to make High Point fertile ground for young people and work relentlessly to make that happen. And that's something we believe in. I think the other reason why I'm hearing from people that they want to support this race is that they are just really fed up with what they're seeing in D.C. They feel that they got sold a bad bill of goods. They like that the border was secured, but every other thing feels like it's a failing grade at this point, whether it's what we're doing internationally, what we're doing with regards to immigration, what we're doing on the economy, and they just want something better. So,
well, Mayor Jefferson, if you happen to win in November, we're going to have to ask the First Lady to make sure she's packing you lunches. If you make it to the Capitol building, we don't want you eating the food or drinking the water. Take your own, because I'm telling you, there's some type of a pollutant up there once you get into D.C. You know, a couple more questions before I'm going to run out of time. One of my deepest concerns have been, and I'm not in the 6th district, I'm in the 5th district, but one of my deepest concerns have been is that Congress is supposed to be a co-equal branch of government. And when you look at the way Congress has been run roughshod over since this new administration came in, it feels like to me and so many others that have watched politics for a great majority of their life, have participated in a lot of different issues. It just feels like to me that there's no more accountability, there's no more oversight, there's no more supervision. It looks like Democrats are going to take control of the House in November, possibly even the Senate, if we stay on the course that we're on right now with the number of retirements and people saying that they're not coming back to the United States Senate. If you're victorious in November, what are you prepared to do as a congressman to reassert your authority as a co-equal branch of government?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, what we're seeing with so many of the emergency declarations coming out of the White House, whether it's the emergency tariffs, right, or the emergency that we did because they claim we had some invasion from immigrants, or the emergency declarations around war, we got to curtail those. We got to put limits on that executive power. Here we have a president who's literally threatening to wipe out entire civilizations. Now, some people say, oh, Trump says crazy stuff because he's just trying to negotiate. And I'm like, dude, I just don't understand how you could say that and not think to yourself that that is a terrible statement. Like, you have to know there is no reason the president of the United States is threatening to commit genocide. It's not okay. And we have to have the, again, the moral clarity, the courage to be able to do our part, to be able to curtail what's happening. And it doesn't mean we have to oppose the White House on every single thing. There's going to be some things inherently, hopefully, that this White House actually tries to get right. Some people say, where might you find some of that alignment? I would have worked very hard to secure the border from the beginning. But to be clear, if you want a quick side note here, Biden had a deal with people like Senator Lankford and others to do a bipartisan border bill back at the end of 2023 that Trump killed because he said, if you fix this issue before the election, I won't get reelected. Right. So here people are playing the politics that they play. Like, we shouldn't be doing it for anyone's reelections. Let's just be clear. Running for office and politics are a means to an end. Parties are a means to an end. It's all about better government. And, you know, if I had one wish, Algernon, actually, if I had a few wishes, I'd use one of those wishes on this, that at some point we go from having just the two major parties that we have right now. And that if we had a third and fourth major party, then I think you'd see a little more, just a little more individuality. You want to see people go to these extremes. There'd be better places for people to fit into. Because right now, I mean, there's folks, and I don't blame them, who see a Republican or see a Democrat and make real assumptions about where those people fall on a political spectrum, because they see, you know, like, to your point, you say, well, Democrats had a stance to defund the police. I'd argue to you there were some Democrats, a considerable amount of them, who had that as their position, and a lot of Democrats who did not. And yet it's seen as a Democratic position, right? There's a lot of Republicans, quite frankly, who embrace neo-Nazis. Let's just be honest. But I got a lot of Republicans who are just not racist, right? Like, they're not. But that's just what it is. Like, people make these perceptions in their minds. I know it wouldn't solve all the problems, but somehow finding a way to give people more opportunities, I think the duopoly is a problem. And look, does that get me in trouble with the Democratic Party for saying that? Maybe. I don't know. I hope the Democratic Party doesn't think my allegiance is to them. I hope they know my allegiance is to the people. And you give me a stage to debate that with anybody, and we see how they do. Tell me that you think I should be more loyal to a party than to the people. Go ahead and say that. I don't think anyone would say that.
No, I totally agree with you. And, I've been a Republican. I always joke, but it's like somewhat true. I've been a Republican since I was in the fifth grade. I cast a straw poll vote for George Bush in the fifth grade against Michael Dukakis, not even because I totally understood the parties. I think I was just trying to rebel against what my mom said. But I do believe I look at my own evolution. And to any of my audience, if you go to lockedin.cash and you read my blog, I've been writing a blog since 2006, and I've never taken a post down, Mayor. I leave them all up because I want people to see the evolution of how I've evolved on how I see certain issues, what I think about politics, and what I think about select issues. And you can see that arc if you actually go to that website. And I agree with you. I think we need more space right now for independents. I think we need more space for people that don't quite feel like they have a home in either party. I would describe myself right now as someone that is wandering the political wilderness to some degree. I don't feel like I have a home with Republicans, but I don't particularly feel like I have a home with Democrats either. And so I'm one of those that's just out roaming around, you know, just trying to sort of figure it out. But I think it all goes back to what we talked about a moment ago, Mayor. If there wasn't so much money in politics, these two parties wouldn't be able to be so dominant. But the reason they're so dominant is because they filter and funnel so much money, and they sort of create this extremism and identity politics that raises emotions. And whenever you raise emotions, people start opening their wallets and writing checks. It's the exact thing that happened with my party and Mark Robinson. They got so excited about Mark Robinson because he was a fundraising machine. However, they weren't willing to look at what he was saying in those rooms and what he was saying behind those closed doors to be able to raise that money. And so I think a lot of this continues to come back home to that single issue that we've got to figure out how to get money out of politics so that we can truly allow policy making. Because, Mayor, where I get excited, I don't get excited about politics. I get excited about policy making, public policy that can change communities, that can change lives. And I think we've got to get back to that common sense policy making. Here's my final question before I let you go. Trump has really opened the door to executive authority. And I try to keep reminding Republicans that he's opened the door that, quite frankly, if you see a Democrat come into the Oval Office, you may be terrified by some of the things that they're willing to do with all these open doors that Trump is leaving behind. When you're talking to your fellow Democratic colleagues, do you think, I'm fast forwarding a little bit here to 2028. Let's say we get a Democratic president in. Are we on board for even more of the same, but maybe a different type of extremism? Or do you think we ever get back to some type of a moderate position?
My hope and belief, Algernon, and maybe I'm just this eternal optimist, but I have to believe that somehow we get back to common sense politics. I have to believe that. I have to believe that there are people who want to be above reproach. If I didn't believe that we could get back to that, I wouldn't be running today. So what that means for 2028 and who ends up being the winner of that, I couldn't tell you. What I'd say is right now, we may not have a clear picture of who that candidate's going to be on the Democratic side. I hope whoever they end up being, let me say more than hope, I believe whoever they end up being, they're going to be someone with an understanding that to get this country back on the right track, it doesn't mean you go exactly in opposite direction of where we've been going the past couple of years. It means that you understand we have to be above reproach. There's some things that have been going that are so incredibly corrupt that we can't do that anymore. And we have to find a pragmatic path forward. And, let's remain civil in the way that we do that. And let's keep believing in that sort of better future that we all envision for our great country. We got to go another 250 years. So that's what matters.
Whether you agree or disagree with Mayor Jefferson, this is the kind of conversation we need more of. Not noise, not performance, but real dialogue about leadership, accountability, and what it actually means to represent people. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support the work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about politics, business, money, and the community issues most important to our state and country. Visit LockedIn.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. You can also subscribe to my podcast on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. Share this episode and send it to a friend. I'm Algernon Cash, and until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.